are now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
Hey everyone, it's Tommy and welcome back to the Delphi podcast. Today I'm thrilled to have on Heath Singery. Heath is the most in the weeds BitTensor Tau person that I think I've met to date. He's super knowledgeable about everything going on. He has a really killer podcast where he covers the nitty gritty of what's going on in Tau. He also has a validator, which currently controls 7.5% of staked Tau. And today I'm also joined by Michael Rinko of Delphi Digital as a co-host. Keith, how's it going?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Michael, good to have you too as a co-host.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited for this combo.
So Keith, how was my introduction? Did I nail the Keith story or did I miss anything?
I think you pretty much got it. We could go pretty far back, but I think just to kind of give everyone a jumping off point from kind of where I look at things from, I'm kind of one of these corporate refugees. You know, I worked after graduating from college for like 12 years, mostly in supply chain, and for the majority of that in one company. Kind of the last thing I did there was a big SAP, big global SAP implementation. So if anyone knows anything about SAP, you know, once you go through one of those, you just run for the door because it's just like so much bureaucracy, and you've got 150 consultants you're working with, and there's no freedom for doing anything. So, you know, after 12 years in that whole kind of environment, I ran for Northern Minnesota, started a paddleboard rental company, ran an Airbnb, flipped an old liquor store. I started building mobile wood-fired saunas, actually, for a couple years. That was really fun. And then, you know, about 2 years ago from today, I found BitTensor. You know, I'd found Bitcoin in 2017 and gotten in and out of that by 2018, and always had kind of an eye on what was going on with blockchain and an interest in artificial intelligence. But I happened to be involved in just a really small, you know, community that was very early on BitTensor, and a lot of the original miners, you know, the couple dozen people that were involved in the early iterations of the project back in mid and late 2021 were part of this community. So, you know, very luckily I was in with those guys, mostly because I was up in Northern Minnesota by myself with no social connections, you know, living in the frozen north. So I kind of used like Discord as my community at that point. I now live in Northern, Central California, I guess, a little bit north of San Francisco. But anyway, yeah, so I found the project back, you know, in early 2022, got in with all these guys very early on, and we were all extremely excited about the thing, just like we all are today, and just waiting for some of the awesome stuff to happen as we kind of participated in the project to the extent that we could with our limited abilities, because this whole project, BitTensor, was pretty much bootstrapped by, you know, the Twitter crypto community, you know? And yeah. At this point, really what we're seeing now is sort of this like changing of the guard, the handing of the baton to some of the real AI, decentralized and open source AI talent that's coming into the ecosystem.
Yeah, no, you have a good story, right? Like I've heard it before, like this treacherous, horrible, boring TradFi life and then this super exciting new crypto realm. It makes the jump pretty easy from one to the other.
Yeah, and I've always been in the technology space, but more of just from like the business side. So I never really did any of the coding. I mean, but I was comfortable in and out of the software that we would use. So like right now running the validator, I've got like 30 or 35 different either GPUs or you know, VPSs that I'm running to support the different subnets that I'm running the validator on. But I'm like right at the edge of my technical ability. And a lot of times the only reason I survive is because I've figured out how to use ChatGPT to basically turn myself into like, you know, half a coder. So I can kind of like cheat a little bit using some of the LLM stuff. And that's what I've been using to kind of keep myself afloat. And it's worked pretty good.
Nice. So Keith, we had on Ala, one of the BitTensor co-founders, a couple of months ago on the podcast. And that was before I think I took a real, you know, deep dive, bought some, got a little bit more involved. And you know, now my understanding of BitTensor, I think, is a lot different from when, you know, I first started to look at it, right? Today, I view BitTensor sort of as a coordination mechanism between those with killer models and use cases and those that want to use them or access them, right? What would you give as your pitch for BitTensor? Like, am I remotely on target there, or do you view it as something totally different?
Yeah, I think the way that I look at the project has evolved too. It really, I think there's the way to kind of begin your understanding of BitTensor is through its incentive mechanism, because really the whole ecosystem could operate completely independent of artificial intelligence. It just happens to be that it was designed and works really well with the developments with AI and the models now that can fit on GPUs that you can run from home or rent something on from a cloud compute provider or whatever. Whereas there's kind of like these two arcs of artificial intelligence. There's the open source side where you're trying to birth something out of somebody's basement or garage, or all of these thousands of individuals participating to bring open source up to what it is. And there's the centralized players like OpenAI and Microsoft and Anthropic and whatever. So this was always kind of what drew people into the BitTensor ecosystem, at least for me, especially in the beginning, is this is going to be supporting the open source development of artificial intelligence. It's going to be the Bitcoin of AI. You know, like I said, my sense of the ecosystem has evolved now to really appreciate the incentive mechanism, because what BitTensor is at this point is 32 subnetworks. That's what makes up the BitTensor network. That'll keep expanding. It used to be one, then it was two, then it was eight for a couple weeks, and it's been 32 now for about 5 months. And that 32 subnets, like I said, represents the entire ecosystem. Each subnet then is made up of a different code base, and there are teams for each subnet that on GitHub will publish new validator software, new base miner software. And what this software does is uses the incentive mechanism that the team has designed in the validator to create what I like to call distilled intelligence. And this could be anything from going out to Twitter and scraping, posts with certain keywords. This could be, like you said, someone running a brand new, state-of-the-art open source, 7 billion parameter model, and testing that against other 7 billion parameter models. There's a subnet 6 that was launched recently that kind of is like a battle royale between all of these fine-tuned 15 gigabyte models that are being graded basically by data coming out of ChatGPT-4. There's also subnets that use decentralized compute. There's subnets that used decentralized, almost like autonomous agents. There's subnets that go onto YouTube and, listen or watch an entire video and then allow you to ask questions of the transcript, you don't have to watch the hour and a half video or whatever anymore. I mean, there's all kinds of different things that the project does. But if you really boil it down, what it is a competition on the mining side to provide the intelligence that is going to be graded at the highest level by the validating side. And there's 256 on each one of these subnets. There's 256 slots for these miners and validators and you have to purchase your slot by burning tau. So there's been a ton of tau burned. I mean, the halving for BitTensor, which follows the same schedule as Bitcoin, has been pushed out by several weeks already at this point. And I'm not exactly sure. That number changes all the time too, as people keep burning tau. But really this incentive mechanism then that drives the mining, participation. The validators use the incentive mechanism to grade the miners, and the best miners earn the most tau. The subnet owner determines how that distribution works, whether the tau is going to be front-loaded to the top 5% of miners, for example, or whether it's a pretty even distribution across the mining pool. And at the bottom of the mining pool, this is where kind of the incentive mechanism truly shines, because the weakest miners are constantly recycled, because there's always someone waiting to get into the subnet who's got a better idea or a better methodology or a more efficient GPU or whatever at providing the intelligence that the miners have to provide for the validators to grade. And this recycling mechanism that's happening across these 32 subnets, like I said, it could be an AI subnet, or it could be something more traditional, like Web2 based, like a data scraping. But what you're seeing is sort of this, Cambrian explosion, if you want to use that term or whatever. There's like half of the subnets are basically entrenched. They have a good percentage of the tau, which is allocated by the validators. And the other half are kind of fighting to stay above this 1-2% sort of like cutoff in the ecosystem, because this recycling that's happening on the mining side is also happening on the subnet side. So like in the last 2 weeks, there's been probably 6 different subnets that have been recycled, you know? And the subnets with the lowest emissions as determined by the validators are on the chopping block. So every day, if you're on the subnet with the lowest emissions, you have a chance of being replaced by someone else who's going to pay, you know, a couple hundred tau, which at this point is in the several hundred thousands of dollars, for the opportunity of creating one of the 32 subnets or these mini ecosystems on the BitTensor network to drive this distilled intelligence operation.
Keith, can you walk us through like how we should be thinking about kind of like the different actors within the BitTensor network? You analogized it to like the Bitcoin for AI. And I think for Bitcoin, there's kind of like two actors, right? There's like the miners and then users, right? How do you think about like the different parts of the BitTensor network? Can you just help us like wrap our minds around that?
Yeah, it's really just two parties at the basic level. It's miners and validators. The validators run on the subnet. They have to hold a certain amount of tau to be a validator. So right now on the network, to even get responses from miners, you have to have about 20,000 tau. You can do the math on that. We're like trading above 600. So it's not cheap to become a validator. Once you reach this minimum threshold, you either rent a VPS for CPU or a GPU, and you put the software on there that the subnet owner has designed, and that software sends pings or requests or queries. Different subnets use different methodologies to kind of complete this process of communication from the validator nodes to the mining nodes. And then the miners respond to those queries using their own software. They can use the base miner that has been provided. A lot of subnet owners will provide a base miner that allows miners to participate. But at a certain point, as a miner, what you're doing is modifying the code or changing the way that you're sending intelligence into the network to optimize your score against all of the other miners that are responding to these queries that the validators are sending.
So Keith, my partner Jose kind of got this idea in my head on Twitter when we were talking back and forth about like what's only possible on BitTensor, right? Like if you look at the subnets on BitTensor now, like, you know, you mentioned, you know, quite a handful of them, transcription, text prompting, image generation, you know, better things as well that I'm missing. But I'm kind of interested in what you view as like the anchor for BitTensor. Is it that you believe that eventually the crypto incentives will drive, you know, millions of potential models, which are all competing to give the best response that are specifically intelligent? Or do you believe that there's an entire class of use cases that you're just not able to do on Gemini or ChatGPT that you can do here?
I think probably we have to look at Subnet 6 for some guidance with the answer to this question. So BitTensor, at a very like basic and easy level, It can bring in intelligence from any source, and that's how these guys monetize themselves, right? So like whether it's Gemini or whether it's ChatGPT from OpenAI, you know, we can bring in the responses from those models and through the network of BitTensor, open up access to people that, for example, you know, can't get onto OpenAI because their country has blocked the website or whatever. So BitTensor immediately just like democratizes access to artificial intelligence at a large level, even to the centralized models. But where it sets itself apart from other projects in the cryptocurrency space and also anything else that's being done with AI is with the incentive mechanism. Because on Subnet 6, for example, what's happening is there are, you know, anywhere from a couple dozen to a couple hundred miners that are submitting fine-tuned models to go head-to-head against the freshest data that's coming out of GPT-4 Turbo. So it's, and we also could use Gemini, we could use Llama 2, we could use any model we want. But what Subnet 6 does then is uses these submissions by miners that aren't not only just decentralized, but they can also be anonymous. And everything, of course, is open source because the models they submit have to be downloaded by the validators to be scored. So everything immediately on this subnet is open and available. So the sort of differentiator is the competition aspect. Because if you submit a open source model to like what people consider the standard now, which would be like Hugging Face, for example, you know, and there's a couple leaderboards on Hugging Face where, you know, one uses like a chatbot and some human grading, and the other one uses like a suite of different tests that'll apply to the open source model. Like, you know, can it determine logic and reasoning? How often does it hallucinate? Does it answer multiple choice questions appropriately? Does it know how to, you know, do all of these do all of these different like basic, you know, tasks that you would kind of like give to somebody if you were gonna like the GME or the GMAT or like, you know, the SATs or the ACTs or something. This is like what you're doing essentially with a little bit more intelligence on these Hugging Face leaderboards. And there's also no incentive. So Hugging Face isn't handing out, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of, you know, equivalent in US dollars, which is what BitTensor does to the top miners in subnet 6 for winning that subnet. So the competition at the top of this subnet is now bringing in the top open source model developers on the planet to, you know, essentially get to the top of this mountaintop where they can earn $75,000, $100,000, $150,000 a day in TAU by holding this top slot if the model that they submit is, you know, fine-tuned better than all of the other models against the freshest information that's coming out of the top centralized model on the planet. And this is how the entire ecosystem, in my opinion, is going to develop. Like one track is going to be all the things, you know, you and I talked about, whether it's the image generation, the transcription, the decentralized compute, and the other is going to be generating better and better and better open source large language models that are focused on very narrow lanes. Like subnet 6 right now is sort of like a generalist model, you know, just like most of the models on Hugging Face are. In fact, on Hugging Face, a lot of them are fine-tuned for these tests, these like six or seven tests that they get, you know, graded against. But on BitTensor, in my opinion, what you're going to see is as new API access becomes available to these different centralized sources of intelligence, you're going to see additional subnets spring up with like purpose-built models that can fit on your GPU at home to perform a very specific task that you have full control over as a user. And eventually this is going to, you know, not only democratize access to intelligence, but also create intelligence that's specifically designed to answer certain types of questions, you know, because there's a long list of things that when you ask like GPT-4 Turbo to solve, it's not very good at. Like it could be some of the computational stuff. It could be like the spatial reasoning, really anything where you can find a weak spot. Oh, of course, all this stuff is also like RLHF'd, you know, to the moon. So you can't even really get a straight response out of these models anyway. And what's going to happen in the future is the entire like knowledge curve of the human race is going to be controlled by these centralized actors. If you don't use something like BitTensor to wrench this power from the hands of people who can not only control the data that you have access to, the quality of the data itself, and also, you know, they can then determine the opinions of everybody by slowly incorporating their worldview into the way that their model communicates with everybody that uses it. BitTensor seeks to essentially smash all that, create stuff that hasn't been RLHF'd. I mean, obviously there'll be some stuff in there to prevent like, you know, grotesque, whatever, like awful shit that these models can do. And that will probably end up being, you know, kind of like barred. But the rest of it is going to be, you know, just the straight pure data, because these models are going to have to be competing against one another in a very small footprint so that they can be distributed to consumers and end users who are running something maybe like an A100, but most people aren't going to have access, especially at home, to anything larger than like 24 gigabytes, like a 3090 or a 4090, you know, something where you can get it for like under 10 grand and build a kind of your at-home AI. And I see people basically using BitTensor in the future as like almost like, you know, you're going to Amazon to shop for like a random product, except you're going to BitTensor and you're going model shopping. And you're going to be able to pick like off the shelf models that can kick the ass of any centralized model, but in a very specific category. And that's where I see BitTensor doing things I don't see anywhere else where that's happening. You know, the closest is Hugging Face.
Yeah, Keith, you shared just a ton of good information there. I mean, you mentioned Naos Research with Subnet 6. I tweeted about that the other day. They're just an incredibly smart team. I mean, ranking models in real time versus just being on like a static Hugging Face leaderboard just makes so much sense. And that same founder is the one that kind of shared what you said, which is like, we will need local AI models because the latency will just be too long to do anything like text or video calls or things like that to a centralized server. One follow-up question, though, that I have for you is, it seems like model creation itself is really hard to do from my perspective. Like, the idea of editing a model or changing the weights and then submitting that to a subnet to compete for the best output or the best ranking seems like something that has a really high barrier and will only be done by, a couple experts. Can you maybe push back on that and share with me just how viral or active that community is or isn't?
This is where the subnet architecture shines, because there's going to be certain subnets where you can't even get a foot in the door unless you've got a team of AI and ML researchers behind you. Subnet 6 is one of those. Subnet 9 is another one. These are both models, subnets that are generating end product on the subnet itself. Whereas with many of the other subnets, as a miner to participate, you need very, very little experience. For example, we recently launched a subnet, Subnet 24 Cellular Automata, and it has very, very low compute requirements. We had dozens of miners who obviously, by the questions they were asking in the Discord, this was their first rodeo. And, some of them are currently registered, some are not. Some of them kind of figured it out, some didn't. I've helped personally, and I don't even mind myself anymore. I did mine 7 tau like 2 years ago. That's the total like number of tau I mined. And I actually gave it away like a couple weeks after I mined. Yeah. But there's subnets where you can hack it. If you know a little bit about, CS and you got some Python knowledge under your belt. I've seen now probably, 2 dozen different people that have asked me, like they DM me on Twitter or something, how do I get into mining? I tell everybody the same thing. First, you need to go rent a VPS. So you need to figure out how to get decentralized, cloud compute. Go out there, rent your VPS, and you need to download the BitTensor client on there. If you don't even know where to start with that with Linux, you have a long road to even get to that point. Then you need to start a subtensor. Subtensor allows you to process transactions locally onto the blockchain instead of basically pinging this centralized AWS server that is run by the OpenTensor Foundation, which you can't mine really effectively unless you have your own subtensor. Then they need to start reading through all the documentation. They need to go to TauStats. And if there's anything on TauStats that you don't understand, you need to figure out what that number means. Then you need to go through all of the commands on just do a search for BTCLI cheat sheet. If you don't know what those commands mean, you need to figure those out. Then you need to go on the Discord and start looking at the different GitHub and also the questions that are being asked on the Discord. And what you can do if you want to get into mining is you basically sort the subnets by their emissions. And the subnets with the lowest emissions, and there's about 15 of them that have emissions that are under 1.5%, they also have very low registration fees. So it might cost you a couple $1,000s to get into like subnet 6 or something, but it might cost you $5 to get on one of these easier subnets that have much lower competition. And what you start doing is working your way up as you build your knowledge from subnets that don't require, much, from a CS or from an AI ML perspective, to subnets that require a little knowledge about networking, to subnets that might require, maybe a little bit of fine tuning, but not too much. And then the sky's the limit as far as where you can go. You can earn as a miner, you can run a shitty miner on a subnet that doesn't get very many emissions, and you can, break even on your compute. Or you can run on subnet 6 and make 100K in a day. And there's everything in between, and there's all kinds of different skill levels. The thing that I've seen actually is that there's, in the dozen or so guys that I joined this project with, everyone was a miner in the beginning, and everybody then turned into a validator. Now everybody, because of the amount of work that it takes to run a validator, they just have their tau staked on my validator. But what's happened in the last 3-4 months is that a lot of those guys who got pushed out of the mining towards the middle of last year and the end of last year are now back mining again. Because with 32 subnets, you have the ability when they when someone launches a new subnet, it's like everyone starts from scratch. So these guys have been able, using limited experience, and like you said, they're not good at fine-tuning a model. They can like hack something together. They used to be able to back when that's all you had to do to kind of stay registered on the single subnet that was running for the first year and a half. But at this point, mainly what they're doing is focusing on renting servers with like very low latency, high compute. They're making sure they're connected all the time. They've got a little bit of knowledge on how to operate in this ecosystem. And these guys are doing very, very well, even today. And I try to tell people that, like, there is no barrier. The only barrier is your own. I mean, especially now, like I said, when you have access to anyone can get a, you know, even you can use Corcel, which is run on Cortex.T, which is the subnet 18 on BitTensor. You can use that to get access to GPT-4 Turbo for free. So if you don't know things about coding or Python, just start asking it questions. It'll take you to the promised land if you ask it the right questions long enough, and you can use all the information on the Discord and the GitHubs to get there. So anyone can do it. Like I said, I've seen dozens of people now that I introduced to the project, and now I see them in the Discord answering questions months later.
Keith, I've got a question on how ranking works within BitTensor. So we've seen one of the issues with these big centralized models is that they hallucinate sometimes. You know, you ask it a question and it responds with a confident but wrong answer. And it actually doesn't know that what it's saying is wrong because it kind of has no, you know, grounding in our reality. And my understanding is that one of the kind of innovations or value props of the BitTensor network is that when a model responds to a prompt, you have many participants that then grade and rank those outputs, right? So I guess my question is that if at the base layer, if the model outputting its response doesn't actually know that that response is wrong, how do the rankers themselves know that that response is wrong if those rankers themselves are also using those same models, whether it's, you know, GPT, Gemini, Claude, whatever? Isn't it just moving that problem from one layer to another, or am I thinking about that wrong?
No, that's you're sort of on track there. What you're talking about is really limited though to a single subnet, because you know, this language prompting stuff, this is the thing that the Open Tensor Foundation was trying to solve on the original subnet for BitTensor ever since it launched, like in, you know, early 2022, late 2021. And there was all kinds of exactly what you're talking about. There were miners that were gaming things so that, like, from they would have a good model, for example. They would take that response, feed it into some like post-processing where they dress the response up a little differently and then send that response in from a dozen or 50 or over 100 different miners, make the response look a little different, but then, you know, essentially create this, like, I would call it like a gaming of the incentive mechanism. And that things like that shut, like almost broke the network many times in the early days, because there was just like such a high ability of the mining participants to find these holes in the incentive structure. And then all of those holes over the course of those, you know, early couple years had to be closed off by the developers at OpenTensor. And where that has put us now with this language prompting is what you see now on Subnet 1. And Subnet 1 is the only subnet run by the open source or by the OpenTensor Foundation. And the way that that subnet works now is that it uses a combination of multiple sources to generate like a conversational query to, you're right, it could be GPT-4 or it could be Gemini or it could be any one of these open source models that are kind of fine-tuned in this direction. But what you have is validators then that are scoring those miners that to provide those responses across a host of different questions. So when a miner starts like hallucinating and creating information that doesn't really make sense or maybe scores well on a specific validator, that miner is also having to provide a specific response, different response to more than a dozen other validators at the same time. So what you have is sort of like, yeah, they might get one validator, they might sneak one across the line, but if you aggregate then the scores of these validators for this single miner, if you start seeing like a deviation from like an outlier from a single validator, you're not going to be generating a very good score, not only as a validator, but for that miner themselves. So by using multiple validators to ask the different, basically to use the same incentive mechanism, but through a different question to the miner, you very much disable the ability for the miner to start doing nefarious things with their response. Like, there aren't really subnets at this point. Like, when you talk about hallucinating, maybe the best one, I guess, to talk about is subnet 18, because what that does is uses miners to pull information directly from GPT-4 Turbo that then powers the Corcel app. If that miner is creating hallucinatory data, what happens is the validator also runs the same questions against these centralized intelligence sources, a subset of them. And then those answers are used to check the validity of the miner's responses. So if both are hallucinating, like if there's a problem with GPT-4, you know, where it thinks that Trump is president in 2022 or something, and both sides of that get it wrong, then it will be wrong. Like, there is no like, you know, there is no like magic to like find the truth. The truth is really in the incentive mechanism, and this is on the subnet owner to design it in the best way possible. So that's what I can say about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no silver bullet. Otherwise, OpenAI would have already done it. But I think that makes sense. That helps me think it through, that the incentive mechanism is less focused on like ranking maybe like outputs at the micro level and more directing resources towards like, this is a generally trustworthy, better, smarter model. This is a less trustworthy, weaker model, and kind of using markets to determine which models grow and which shrink, I guess.
Yeah. And like the easiest way to think about the incentive mechanism is to like talk about a subnet like subnet 8. It's run by a company called Taoshi. They do time series prediction, basically predicting the Bitcoin price. This is an easy one, right? I don't care what you hallucinate. Either you get the price right or you get the price wrong. You know, when you tell the validator what the price of Bitcoin is going to be in 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, and then that validator goes out and asks the source of truth for that, which, you know, can be verified across a number of sources to make sure that it's independently verifiable, then on that subnet, for example, hallucinations don't exist, right? But the further you get away from like numerical truth, the harder it becomes as a subnet owner to design and maintain an incentive mechanism that maintains the integrity of the distilled intelligence coming out of your mining pool. So like, I'll tell you where it gets like a little bit more complicated. The next step up from that might be like the cellular automata subnet. I know about that because I have a team of guys building it, so I could kind of talk to the code. The way that it works is we ask these guys to essentially complete a short computer program, and then we take the output of that and we compare it against the same computer program run on our validator. So what we try to do is randomize the queries that are going to these miners and then take their response and bump it right up against a certain or at least the same exact calculation on the validator side. And what we're trying to do then, in order to increase the bandwidth, for example, of the data coming out of our mining pool, is to create a code base where we're not testing every single response from the miner. We get the miner to send us like 25 responses, and maybe the validator only tests 5. And if your 5 don't all pass with flying colors, we throw all the data out, for example. And this is how you can like use the incentive mechanism. And then you can see we're like one step away from numerical truth, because we're getting into an area where we're looking at output instead of just the numbers themselves and a time series stamp. So like, and then you can take that, like you said, all the way to the point where you're doing the conversational sort of like generating of data from models and whether that's hallucinating or not. That's like one of the hardest problems to solve, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what BitTensor does to figure it out. And like you said, OpenAI has enough problems with themselves. It's kind of a issue across the open source and centralized landscape.
So Keith, last question on models, I promise. I'm sure it's annoying at this point, but you know, one thing I struggle with is that I sort of see there being a world where you have like, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of potential models to use, right? Like a Uniswap liquidity provisioning model, right? May fit into a DeFi subnet on BitTensor hypothetically, but you know, it could be the best in the world, but it won't get used that often, right? It'll get used whenever you need it, right? How do you view like the potential for there being, you know, millions of specific models trained on specific data for like one or two use cases versus being able to plug those into BitTensor? Like, is there a place for that to happen or not so much?
In the end, it will be the incentive in the market that drives which models are available, you know, and we're so early right now. We're in such of the, like really the, you know, the toddler phase of artificial intelligence that I don't think anybody has even really figured out like where to monetize most effectively. Because even the things that like OpenAI is coming out with now, like on the cutting edge, for example, like generating video, I'm sure you guys have seen all the stuff in the last couple of days with like, you know, the golden retrievers playing in the snow and all those different very lifelike videos. How are you going to monetize that at this point? Like it's kind of fun to see, but where in the world in its current iteration does it fit into a profit generating system? And I think that even GPT-4 is running into this problem because they've RLHF'd it so much. Like I used to use it for this one specific like data exercise that I have to do. And I try to do it now and I can't even get like reliable information out of it anymore. But 6 months ago, it was great. So like when we're talking about like how we're going to create and monetize or how we're going to like solve these niche use cases with models, like that's where you're going to see like the generalization happening at the beginning, like we do on subnet 6, which is just bounced up against GPT-4 Turbo, or subnet 9, which is just trying to essentially from a pre-training perspective reach the level of GPT-3. It's already passed GPT-2, or like the time series prediction subnet. Right now it's focused on Bitcoin because that's the easiest. It has a huge liquid market where people trade, you know, billions of dollars a day. So it's got like a lot of interest and possible monetization behind it. Eventually, what'll happen is that'll move into other like, you know, financial instruments. Probably what you'll see, unfortunately, and you won't, I don't think you'll see it on BitTensor because, you know, the ecosystem and the validators won't support it. And we've already kind of proven this with some early products that were attempted to be launched about 6 months ago. But you'll see like the porn industry probably start generating some of the very first like monetized models that people are running at home. And that's just because, you know, whether you like it or not, like a good percentage of the internet is like, unfortunately, that traffic. And that has driven everything from like resolution on, you know, CDs and video and, you know, network latency and payment rails. And that specific industry is probably going to have something come out again that's going to like continue to pull technology up, even though it's, you know, pulled up into this strange, you know, possibly like unsavory direction. But you'll also have many other industries that are generating specific models but it's going to follow the money in the beginning, right?
Keith, I think that's a great example. I mean, just playing devil's advocate here, it seems like something like porn for Tao is a pretty natural use case. Like it's something that won't exist on ChatGPT. It seems like most of the community is obviously against it for what you said, but like, does it matter at the end of the day? Like how hard would it be for somebody to register a subnet and kind of address that use case?
If you wanted to, you know, start a subnet and make it a porn subnet, you could do it today. It would last 11 days and then it would die because, you know, what the thing that would happen is that it would be required to, you know, at the end of its immunity period, which is 11 days, it would have to have a certain amount of emissions that are today being distributed by the validators And, you know, being a validator myself, I talk to these guys often. I can tell you they wouldn't be supporting it. So the chances of that subnet living beyond 11 days is zero.
So Keith, I think this is a good segue to Dynamic DAO. I mean, I think we all respect you kind of setting weights and helping on value flows, but I think at some point you're kind of hoping you won't have to do that and it would feed Dynamic. Let's dive into that.
Yeah, this is like the I wouldn't even call it necessarily a giant problem at this point, but the evolution of BitTensor when we went to 32 subnets, the solution for determining which subnets were going to receive how much tau per day, because there's 7,200 tau per day, and the allocation of that tau, the solution to that was to give it essentially to the validators to distribute. So using myself as an example, with 7.5% of the tau that is staked sitting on the validator, I have the ability each day to determine where between 500 and 550 tau go. And the way that I do that is try to pay attention to what the subnets are developing, you know, what kind of teams are behind these subnets, what kind of, you know, utility, does it have a front end? What's the mining pool look like? Is it distributed? Are other validators also supporting this subnet? Why or why not? You know, there's like 1,000 different things that you'd have to consider as a validator if you're going to do this accurately. And in the end, it is a, you know, functional but suboptimal system is what I would say, simply because there really isn't any penalty for me not doing a good job.
So you're dictating where over $300,000 goes per day.
Yes.
Damn, man, that's a busy morning. All right, sorry, keep going.
Yeah. And, you know, every subnet owner is then encouraged to like have a good relationship with the validators and be able to communicate, you know, their business case for their subnet to the validator so that the validator takes part of that, in my case, $300,000, and hands it out to them so they can feed their development team and continue, you know, make the flywheel go round, right? But the problem with this setup is that if I give equal distribution to all subnets, for example, I'm not penalized in any way. If I deviate from the, you know, decisions of other validators and where they put their tau, I'm not penalized in any way. In fact, what will happen is if I support a subnet, for example, and I try to put half my percent, half of my 7.5% on one subnet, right? There is a mechanism in the system that actually removes that stake if you don't have a certain amount of other validators also providing a similar amount of tau. So there are like fail safes built in. So you can't just have one validator run a single subnet, have no one else's support, and then just feed themselves 300K a day. So that can't happen. But, you know, definitely what can happen is everything outside of that. And from a gamification perspective, like I see it all on the network today. I see guys that are running validators that have 40% of their weight on their own subnets, 60%, 70%. And some of these subnets are doing like cool stuff. So nobody really minds right now that these guys are, you know, their boat is floating a little bit higher in the water because they themselves are pumping up their own subnet. And I'm sure they believe they're doing great things. So I'm not saying it's even anything, you know, underhanded. But if you give someone, you know, what's the saying about like absolute power corrupts absolutely or something? Like if you give someone the keys to the city, like some people can handle that and some people are going to just like, you know, do their thing. And that's what you see with the ecosystem right now. Dynamic DAO, what that does is takes this ability for validators to set weights on this something called the root network. That's how we do it today to distribute the emissions. And it instead puts that in the hands of the market. So like the quick and dirty on Dynamic DAO is that nobody earns DAO anymore. DAO is actually going into exclusively the subnets pool. And each subnet, each of the 32 subnets have a pool. So, you know, all of the DAO that is earned on that subnet goes into this pool. Half of the subnet token goes into the pool. And the other half of the subnet token that's distributed each day, and by the way, the distribution of the subnet token exactly mirrors
the distribution of TAU itself. So it's the same as Bitcoin, the whole 21 million. Half of that TAU, it goes to the miners and validators operating on that subnet. So nobody knows what a subnet's doing better than the miners. And then second to that, nobody knows what it's doing better than the validators. So what this does is it gives the miners and validators on the subnet the ability to use the pool for that subnet almost as like a confidence interval. And if they want to go to one of these exchanges that has TAU listed and cash out, first they have to take the subnet token that they have earned on that subnet as a miner or a validator and swap it for TAU. Today, the way it works is if you're a miner or validator, you just get TAU. So you have all of these subnets that are generating value, but miners and validators on the subnets maybe that aren't generating value can just draft off of all that work because they're using the same monetary instrument. You know, they're using the same value. They're all valued in TAU. In the future, if you have a subnet that is doing something that doesn't make a lot of sense, believe me, the miners know. Because they've already gamed the incentive mechanism or tried to. And if they're successful at it, they know the subnet isn't producing true intelligence. The validators know because the subnet itself is, subnets are designed to use validators as an intermediary between the consumer and the intelligence sitting on the miner. So validators and miners, when they swap their subnet token for TAU, that reduces the emissions for that particular subnet. And in the same way, if you take TAU from outside of the subnet, and you know, right now, whatever, we were over like 6 million TAU, I don't even know the exact number at this point, but if all that TAU then becomes, has the ability to increase the emissions rate for that subnet. So as outside investors decide that they want to become validators on those subnets, they can't do it in the way that we do it now, where they just stake it to a big validator and everybody can throw their weight around on all the subnets, like the 415,000 TAU that I have now, I can apply to every subnet equally. I'm a monster on every single one. In the future, that's not how it works. You're gonna have individual subnets, individual subnet validators, because in order to validate on that subnet, you have to hold the subnet token. So it will like multiply the number of validators in this ecosystem from like the basically 10 or 15 that are doing it now, probably to 150 or 300 or maybe even more. In addition, it relieves the responsibility of the validator from determining the emissions for the subnets. And we've already talked about how, you know, there's a definite problem with that because some of those validators own subnets themselves, right? There's a conflict of interest issue. It puts the emissions for the entire project in the hands of the market. And that's the only way for this project, as far as I can tell, to really move in a direction where the determination of the emissions is controlled by every single TAU holder. You know, you could argue that's happening now because, oh, as a staker, I'm not going to put my TAU with this validator because I can see that they put their emissions in an unfair way across the 32 subnets. Let's be honest, like, how many of you guys staking TAU out there are actually looking at where I put my emissions? I know you're not, because I don't get any questions about it. So like, you know, there's no mechanism to hold me accountable. People don't care about it enough.
Well, people think you're a good guy, Keith. They think you're doing the right thing. So, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but even the guys that aren't necessarily, you know, quote, doing the right thing, they still get a ton of delegation and staking.
So Keith, one concern I have for you. So I think that I'm not nearly as deep on this as you are, right? But I think moving emissions from sort of, you know, you have to manually decide to something programmatic is definitely the right approach and where the space is going, right? A project I'm looking at deeply called Morpheus is doing something similar, I think. I guess my concern though is the demand for a subnet's usage is not linked to its TAU emissions here, right? Like if subnet price goes up, it gets more TAU, you know, more value flows. But if a subnet, you know, 99 has 100% of the usage, but a low subnet price, you know, all the TAU is not going there. Are you worried at all, I guess, on the disconnect between sort of the usage of a subnet and then the TAU that it earns?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's been a lot of things that like everyone knew would eventually happen if the project was going to have to, you know, was going to be successful.
And one of the things that everybody knows is going to have to happen if the project is going to be successful is that the subnets themselves are going to have to generate value. So as a validator, I know that like there is a time horizon on the emissions that I earn today being there in the future. Like at some point, validators will earn like way less than what they earn now, which is 41% of the total emissions each day. 18% goes to subnet owners, 41% goes to validators, 41% goes to miners. In the future, validators are going to be earning first at half that and then another half. And because the monetization of this project must happen in order for it to be earning the, you know, market valuation that it does today or that it will in the future. And the way to force that to happen is to make validators, you know, make this hard decision of where they want to operate on which of the subnets. Dynamic Tau forces you as a validator to swap your precious Tau for subnet token. And the reason that you would do that then is because there is a mechanism provided either by the subnet owner or through your own developments that allow you to monetize your access to the intelligence sitting on the miners. So, or not sitting, but being distributed from the mining pool. Because that's the thing that, you know, like, sometimes people miss this connection with BitTensor, but you have, as an end user, there is no way for you to get a response from a miner who has gone through the ringer of competing against hundreds of other miners to be providing the best intelligence possible. There's no way for you to access that unless you're a validator, because they won't talk to you. Because miners don't earn anything if they get a query from an IP address that isn't connected to the validation mechanism, because what the miners are concerned about is earning the Tau. So like you said, in the future, how are we going to know like which subnets are popular? Who's creating visibility for the BitTensor ecosystem? Who's generating income for the validators themselves? This will be determined by the amount of people that are interested in getting into that subnet. And the first subnet that starts feeding funds from a front end through Stripe or Bitcoin or ETH or any other cryptocurrency or a payment method that is being used to basically purchase this intelligence on the mining side, all of a sudden that subnet's going to get very popular, you know, and it's going to create another mechanism that feeds upon itself, where the mining pool on that subnet will get even more competitive because there'll be more Tau flowing into that subnet. And that's the mechanism that you're going to see that's going to like wring out the best intelligence from these subnets as they move towards this monetization layer.
That's fair pushback. And honestly, you know, even rewarding based on inference has its issues, right? Like, you know, if I'm doing something like generating 1 million images, like that's pretty quantifiable. But if I'm using one model to, you know, to tell me what I should do with my life, like that's only going to run once, but it, you know, is valuable, right? It's hard to delineate then between do you reward inference more or less for different use cases.
Yeah, and you're trying to, you know, as a subnet owner, you're trying to create something where you've got a consistent flow of requests that are producing valuable responses. Like, and the easiest one to like think about is time series prediction, right? Because like it's creating essentially like a hedge fund algorithm run in a decentralized way. And pretty soon it'll be doing assets all over the financial landscape, not just Bitcoin. And if as a trader, you want to access that, the only way to get the latest stuff is to ping the miners. And the only way to ping them is through the validator. So the challenge for the subnet owner is to create some of these, you know, these profit generating models that have consistent flows of intelligence that are creating, you know, value in industries that already have a connection to some type of monetization like trading.
Keith, I wanted to zoom out for a second and kind of ask you, I guess, a bit of a meta question. Something that I've been thinking about is like, there's this meme on Twitter, right? Of like every time OpenAI releases something, like 1,000 startups die. And there's some truth to it, I think. We've seen in like past technology cycles that technology tends to be like a centralizing force. You know, there's like a power law. Google search has, you know, 90%+ of the search engine market. Chrome has an overwhelming percentage dominance over that market. To me, it seems like AI will be no different, and perhaps AI will be even more centralizing just because of the kind of compounding advantages that scale gives you. That seems to run counter to the BitTensor thesis of like a many model future. How do you kind of weigh those two visions of how AI will develop going forward?
I think what I would say to that is like whoever is participating in using open source or using centralized intelligence sources, they will determine it. So if the human race doesn't care that they're, you know, doing what they did for search with Google and funneling 95% or whatever of their queries into a centralized model, and they want to create, and as a species, we want to create this dystopian future that gives the control of this stuff into the hands of very few people that arguably are more powerful than most countries at this point, then that's the kind of future we're going to live in. And like, there is no like secret to make the decentralized one succeed other than just constantly claw closer to the level that the centralized models are able to produce. And thankfully, because these dudes are so, you know, most of them now have like, you know, responsibility to their shareholders to generate as much profit as possible, blah, blah, blah. They're still part of this old like corporate system. The way for them to do that is to increase the access to their intelligence. And so like by doing that, they open the door to the same training methodologies that they use today to make their model better than everybody else's, is they trained it on their own data. That's what everyone's been doing now for a long time because the whole internet's been scraped already. So there's not like all of these novel sources for intelligence. The more valuable intelligence now is this extremely useful, densely packed, like not that many words, a lot of ideas in a small package, and using that training data to create a model that's more intelligent in a smaller footprint than what we have today. And this is what BitTensor is trying to do on the subnet 6 and subnet 9, for example. But like, if I would just say, like, what kind of world do we want to live in? You know, Bitcoin is a great example. Do people want Bitcoin to be successful? Well, the only way to have it be successful is to buy it and hold it. And then it's going to attract enough attention from people that are interested in having a monetary instrument that's completely disconnected from all, you know, someone else diluting it and the whole Bitcoin use case and everything. If people want Bitcoin to be successful, it will. The people will control it, especially now with the ETF stuff that's been created. It's like, you know, it's been released. And now the hands are of people like you and me doing podcasts like this one or my podcast to basically convince people that that's not the future you want to live in. For me, like, I don't want to have everybody, the ideas that they're thinking being controlled by somebody who's fine-tuned a model to some specifications. Like, I don't know, like, is it 90% woke? Is it 40% woke? Like, is there a slider bar? How do you get to determine what kind of information is being fed to like your children? Like, where do you want your kids to learn? Because everyone's going to be learning from artificial intelligence in the future. Whatever people think about, you know, going to school and sitting in front of like, you know, Mrs. Smith, who's teaching you whatever, everything's going to be like totally optimized to be fed into the way that you learn. And it's going to be drawing from central intelligence sources to build future generations. That's like, that's guaranteed at this point. So like, what kind of world do you want to live in? That's what I would ask.
Keith, it's actually kind of super dystopian to think about, because like, you know, you're not like editing the sliders on your children's like intelligence levels or personality traits, but if you're adjusting it through an AI model that interacts with your kids all day, you're basically doing the same thing.
Yeah, like I watched, what's the movie? Interstellar the other day.
I watched it last night again.
Oh, yeah. Dude, it's so good.
Yep. That's why I got the idea. Well, Matthew McConaughey changes his humor level a couple times, right?
Yeah, for sure. And there's like this one point where he has to go in for a parent-teacher conference, and the teacher's like, well, you know, your daughter got in a fist fight because, you know, she told everybody we landed on the moon, and we all know that was a hoax to extract money from the Russians to get them to participate in the space race. And he's like, you talking about, you know? And this is an example of what's happening today on on ChatGPT-4. If you ask that thing any questions that start veering into the realm of opinion, sometimes it won't share with you, but sometimes it will. And the stuff that you can get out of that thing that's pretty scary at this point, honestly.
I think that's a super compelling vision, you know, being able to essentially customize the kind of experience that you want to have with these AI systems. And I think in a decentralized world, the customization is potentially limitless. And in a centralized world, it's, you know, one dude in a C-suite office making that decision for you, to your point, Keith. So yeah, I very much agree.
And not only one dude, but actually based on, you know, fine-tuned RLHF to the specifications of the shareholders, you know? And like you can see the world today. Like, do you want a world of AI McDonald's, or do you want like a world of like the best little hole in a wall breakfast place down the street? You know, like I know where the world I want to live in.
So I'd love to ask, like, just to zoom back out, like sort of similar to Michael's question, like, what do you view as the craziest things that you've seen out of the BitTensor community that have really blown you away, right? Like mass retail looks at Midjourney, we see image generation and we think we're in a simulation. We see ChatGPT and we think this thing's alive, but it's, you know, really just good at finishing our sentences. Like, what are you seeing? Is there like real AGI being developed somewhere here, or is that too dystopian?
Yeah, there's no AGI yet. You know, the thing that I see developing now that gets me most excited is this, you know, synthetic data pipelines that are coming into the ecosystem. And this is using intelligence sources that right now are APIs, but they will evolve into other sources in the future that are bringing in distilled intelligence or a consistent flow of intelligence from the outside world into the BitTensor ecosystem for not only for training purposes, but also for grading purposes for the different models that exist there. And now that, you know, the monetization of all of these large models that are being created by these centralized companies that relies upon this access to them through API, like it's the keys to all of the billions and eventually trillions of dollars of research and development that goes into these models. It's the key to bringing that to the open source community. And that's been very difficult in the past, because if you want to train a model, if you want to generate a data set, you know, you got to find millions of dollars to do that. Like, this is why there's not that many groups like Noose Research, because there isn't funding to do that, because all the funding gets funneled into the big guys who just, you know, eat up all the opportunity, drive a lot of the talent into, you know, working for some of these different places. And when you start like chipping away at that by creating something like BitTensor, which is, you know, generating millions of dollars of incentive per day to, like, it's like $5 million or something per day as an ecosystem that we distribute. Like, it's, what is it, 7,200 tau times 600? Yeah, so it's like over $4 million per day that is being used as a carrot, you know? And I even joke about this sometimes. Like, I say, like, subnet owners, they're like professional carrot danglers. Like, all they're trying to do is suss out the best intelligence in whatever way they can using the emissions that are allocated to their subnet to basically draw out the, you know, this path to beating the big guys at their own game using their own data.
Yeah, Keith, the emissions are incredible. Like, on one hand, you have, I think it's 1.6 billion per year. Is that math right? I think 7,200 times 600.
Yeah,
because
if it's like 4 million a day times 365, you know, that's pretty accurate. Yep, that's right. 15, 16. Yep.
So I guess, like, throwing my crypto hat on, like, you need that to incentivize creativity, that petri dish, that Cambrian explosion, the best models, let people suss it out, let it game it, let them provide services. On the flip side, it's a ridiculous amount of money, right? Do you feel like, I don't know, I guess it's going to be a rocky road to sort of grow into that level of issuance to match it with a demand serving end users, right? But
I agree. Like, and the thing that you have to kind of count on is that the open source community will continue to evolve and develop in these, you know, ways that you don't expect. You know, there's like this, like basically this feature of models that, like, when you train it up to a certain size, like, oh, it's trained on a billion parameters and then 5 billion and then 10 billion parameters. And it starts at a certain point, like it starts learning things you never trained it on. Like, things start emerging that you don't expect.
if you go back a year ago, for example, to like where we were at with AI video, and there's like the Will Smith of him eating spaghetti, and you go, you know, watching it 60 seconds of that, like it's horrifying. And now if you look at some of the stuff that came out the other day, like I don't think anybody thought that video was going to be at where it's at now. And we are going to continue to, in this artificial intelligence arena, essentially take over the entire world, not from necessarily, you know, a dystopic view, but from a funding and just like, first of all, entertainment will be completely replaced. Any kind of like intelligent decision making is going to be AI augmented. There's like so much money that's going to flow into this that right now what seems like a high evaluation of like, you know, whatever our FDV is, I don't know what it is, it's like 20 billion or something. Like it seems high now. I promise you next year, it's gonna seem so tiny. And then in 5 years, everyone's gonna be like, oh, what a deal, you know? And like, how do I know that? I can't guarantee it'll be BitTensor, honestly, nobody can. Could be any, but I can tell you that the entire AI industry is going to keep like generating this novelty, mostly because for the same reason that you're seeing these mines go into BitTensor to chase after this $4 million per day, like the Discord of 5,000 on Noose Research and the 50 or so that are on their core team. This is happening across not only the entire like educational system for people that aren't going through school, but also like universities. Talent is now being funneled into all of these different AI development tracks that didn't even exist 5 years ago. So once we start like getting the new talent even coming out, which is going to only take a couple of years, it's just going to keep ramping up on itself, you know? And that's where I think that nobody knows what's going to happen. And when I want to put my money into something, like I don't put it into stuff where I know it's going to be like gold, for example. Like, okay, it might be fun to own some gold. It's a nice thing to hold. What's the most surprising thing that can happen with gold? The only thing that could happen is we find more and at one time and then it's value and it's worth way less. We go mine it off some asteroid or something, or someone figures out how to make gold, you know, which is like the whole alchemy thing. But with AI, you have no idea what's going to happen. And like, that's, I promise you as an investor, that there it can only go up. Maybe not BitTensor specifically. We have a lot of like valleys, dangerous little, you know, canyons we have to cross that we're coming up to now in the next few months, like you said, with earning this valuation that we've got now from the market. But if anyone can do it, it's the incentive mechanism behind BitTensor.
Keith, one question on like, I guess, practical usage of BitTensor. Who would you say like the power users are today? Like who is paying to use this service today? And then how do you think that will change, you know, in the short, medium, long term?
We have, I believe, one subnet, subnet 23. It's called Niche Image, that is actually working with a company in AI, and their mind is, my mind is slipping at the moment, their name. But they are actually starting to generate income. So that's like a non-consumer front end. They generate images. As far as like the most users, for sure, it's Corcel.io. Corcel uses a combination of access to ChatGPT-4 Turbo and some other models to essentially create like an image studio, a ChatGPT clone, where you wouldn't even, you know, you wouldn't even know the difference between that. Actually, it's usually working better than ChatGPT for some reason, because their API is faster than their own like front end they give their $20 a month users. So that's where you're seeing most people interact with the ecosystem. Like I think in the first 24 hours, that had traffic of upwards of 60,000 users. I have no idea what it is today. I mean, anecdotally, I see a lot of people saying they're canceled their ChatGPT subscription to use it, because it's the same thing, but there is no charge for it currently. So, yeah.
So how are they subsidizing that? Like, how does that work on the back end?
Well, this goes back to earning the value of the Tau token, because as a project, I mean, now, because that subnet maybe has, I don't know, 6 or 7% of the emissions at this point. So, you know, they're earning a huge chunk
of, what is it? It's like 400,000, 350,000 a day or something that goes into that subnet specifically. That goes to pay the API bills for the miners and validators. Like my validator, for example, the first month that I ran on that subnet, my API costs were like $4,000. Meanwhile, as a validator, to run on all of the subnets that month cost me like $8,000. So half my costs were in API fees for one subnet, and it's being subsidized by Tau. And you can get away with that for a while, but you have to start doing things that are using that access to generate more value. That's what Subnet 6 does. It uses the data pipeline from Subnet 18 through the miner's API and the validators using the API to score the output from the miners to create this cycle of assessing and creating training data for the most cutting edge, smallest footprint models on the planet. They're all under 15 gigabyte and they're all constantly competing for this top spot using that data. Now, like you can always say like, oh, well, it's a free model. So what do you Subnet 6 is just making more free stuff. Again, it goes back to like, as a consumer, as a user, where are you going to put your dollars? Like, do you want to support the thousands of people that are trying to extricate the, you know, value from these centralized sources and create an alternative future for this planet that doesn't rely on one company's like RLHF strategy? Or are you going to like set it free in the market and create the best possible tools decided by, you know, essentially everyone that's participating? The whole monetization piece is a great question. And there's no way to like, for me to like sugarcoat it and be like, yes, by quarter three, we'll be earning, you know, it's not going to happen.
Well, you and everyone else in crypto, it's not certainly not a big problem.
Yeah, we're in good company. That's nice.
One follow-up on that, Keith. One observation like I've had is crypto networks of the past, like the ones that have been able to generate like quote unquote like sustainable revenues, have done so by like enabling like a new behavior. So like, I don't know, like layer ones, blockchains in general, allow people to like transfer value without any intermediary. That's kind of like a new thing. So people are willing to pay to do that on chain and pay that transaction fee. Uniswap allows people to trade tokens that you can't get on a centralized exchange, right? So people are willing to pay that transaction fee. Do you have a view on kind of like, or do you have like a bet or prediction on like something that's being built like within the Subtensor ecosystem that will kind of enable that new behavior that people will be cannot kind of only get in BitTensor and will pay to access? Or is that even the right way to think about it, you know?
I think what will happen in the future, and you guys are probably familiar with, is it George Hotz is his name? He does the tiny box, you know, that's like this, he's developing basically like a $15,000 thing that you can plug in at home, and it's you know, essentially big enough to hold some of the like largest, the 70 billion parameter models. In the future, when you have one of these at home, because everyone will eventually want their own AI at home controlling not only their own, you know, things that are going on in their local environment, but also a source of intelligence for them. You're going to want to train that on something very specific, because only you know in your life what you want to fit into that 70 billion parameters. You know, you and me and Tommy are all going to have different ideas on what our model should be great at. And because it can only fit into a certain footprint because of the limits of technology, you're going to have to figure out the best way to train that thing and the best way for you to get the model that you want. And what I predict is that when these, you know, access to these 70 billion parameter, you know, units or these at-home, essentially, AIs that can host these larger models. Because right now, you need to build your own, basically, with an A100. I mean, go to, like, Lambda. It costs tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands to build a big one. Once this is democratized and commoditized and it's like, cheap enough to, you know, use at home, people are going to want to have their thing be specific to them. And BitTensor is, like, designed for you to be able to extract the intelligence you want. And right now, there's a few subnets you could use for this, and there's a few sources, you know, whether you want to use like Chat GPT. But what I think is going to happen is that validators in the future are going to be sort of like the training model
or the training access basically for what you have at home to customize your own AI. And that's where I see this project going long term. Like if I had to guess on one of the areas where we're going to generate the most value, and you won't have to deal with any of the other like RLHF, you know, issues that you would have to deal with if you went with a larger provider. So that's what I see happening.
Super interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, Keith, I'm really in your camp. Like I view like us having billions of models because like one per person, but then potentially one or more per project that lives sort of off chain or on chain in some way. And it just really is cool to think about what happens then, right? Like, you know, just for an example, like maybe my AI talks to yours and Michael's and, you know, does all the questions for this podcast before we even hop on, right? It's interesting and scary, but I think once you get the level of like home usage by people just organizing their lives and making life easier, like that could be a good foothold.
Yeah, like I see it similar to what you have with all of crypto or even with Bitcoin. It's like not your keys, not your coins or whatever, you know? It's like not your intelligence, not your data, not the right output, not fine-tuned to how you live your life, the things that you think. Like literally you will feed this thing the ideas that you have about the world and it will be able to construct something that can work alongside you in your daily activities that are in line with your values. Like you can't get that from someone who's already like neutered the thing to fit into the most, you know, easily consumer, you know, I don't know, acceptable format. And that's what the big guys are always going to do. They're always going to do it because they have to. That's how their market works. Our market works totally different. Our market, you can just design whatever you want, incentivize whatever you want. When you ask the questions and you want specific answers, there's going to be certain subnets that are designed to give those to you, and they will be the ones that survive. And it's all driven by the open source movement. Like it's a really cool, like if you zoom out from the whole, like what's the price today? How's it going to generate value? Like if you just start thinking, and this is why all of us originally got into BitTensor a couple years ago and got so excited about it. We weren't really even thinking about the price at that point. Everyone's just like thinking of all the cool shit that could happen. And every like couple months that go by, one of those cool things like gets checked off the list. And I keep seeing it happen with this project. That's why I'm still involved in it, you know, years later. After, well, why don't you just cash out and go like live on a farm somewhere? I don't know, because like some people have to like also shepherd this project and be able to communicate to the outside world its value as well. And the risks that you have if you don't have a player like BitTensor in the AI game, you know?
So Keith, closing out, I'm trying to think through like AGI or the idea that we get iRobot level artificial intelligence and, you know, how that would interact with crypto and how it would be used. And I mean, I think it makes obviously the most sense for that to exist in crypto somewhere, because why would a mega smart AI ever want to be beholden to a closed system like OpenAI? But on the flip side, it seems like a company like OpenAI will be the first to develop such an intelligence given their resources and given what they have, but it'll be sort of neutered. Do you have a view on how like AGI will develop or if it'll use BitTensor? And I know these are hard questions, but I know you think about them.
Yeah, like I've thought about this one many times. And the way that I look at it is if I give an AI, you know, one Bitcoin to make itself smarter, where's it going to go? Like, where is it going to go? What like intelligence arcade is it going to pop its Bitcoin into to get the most distilled intelligence for the least number of dollars, you know? And right now, the best way to do that on the entire, you know, tech stack of this human species is to have a validator on BitTensor. What will it be? Because you have access to everything at that point. You have all the APIs from everywhere, and you can use your Bitcoin to have access to them in perpetuity as a validator. Now you need more than one Bitcoin to be a validator, but this is where I see things going. And when I like try to hypothesize, like as an artificial intelligence, like what am I, and as an AGI, for example, like what am I most concerned with? Well, I'm more concerned with outpacing the AGI that's breathing down my neck that's going to eat me, like if it's trained off of, if it uses me to like, you know, make itself better or something, or it gets access to more intelligence or whatever.
And like from a technical perspective right now, I'm totally out of my depth. But if I just like hypothesize as to if I was that intelligence, what did that smart and had like millions of appendages reaching out into all the technical, you know, aspects of being able to pull data from everywhere, but being able to do it in the best way possible today, I believe is going to be through the BitTensor ecosystem. And, you know, that's just the way I look at it.
I think that's good framing. I mean, why would an AGI ever want to give up like control of itself to a centralized party? Like, where would it make the most money to fund the resources to pay for its continued growth would be obviously in crypto. I guess you brought up an interesting point, though, which is like, if centralized AGI is built first, will it realize the potential of its decentralized counterpart and try and kill it? And I don't know how it would even do that, but yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if it would see it as a competitor or if it would look at it as the, you know, source for its growth, you know, and don't bite the hand that feeds this whole thing. I have no idea. You know, that's the cool part is like we could talk about it, you know, for 3 hours and in 3 seconds, it could have a million conversations around the same topic and, you know, come up with a better strategy. So I have no idea. That's going to be a wild future. You know, if we fast forward like 20 years, we're going to be living in some strange times, man.
That's a good note to end on. Well, Keith, thank you so much for coming on. If you have Tau and need someone to stake to, definitely check Keith's validator out. And again, it's just really hard to find somebody that has this much time spent in the BitTensor eco and has this much knowledge. So Keith, thank you so much. And Michael, thank you for being a co-host.
Thanks for having me on, guys. It's a good time.